If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we're joined by one of the most exciting young talents in British road racing. 20-year-old Sam Watson's rise might be described as meteoric, but there is no sign of him crashing to earth. Instead, his career has retained a vertiginous trajectory year after year since he first pinned on the number for Chevin Cycles in 2014. This year, Sam placed himself at the front and centre of the British sporting consciousness with magnificent rides at the National Road Race Championships, where he won silver medals in the road and circuit races, and with three top 10 finishes at the Tour of Britain. The Cognoscenti, however, might place greater emphasis on his triumph at the under-23 Gent Wevelgem or his Stage 5 victory at the Tour d'Alsace. Even in an era of exceptionally talented young riders, Sam can confidently claim a place among the world's best espoirs. Like teammates Jake Stewart and Lewis Askey, he has a French connection. Next season, Sam will become the next young British rider to graduate from FDJ's Continental squad to its World Tour team. His development has been shaped by some of the most respected institutions in British cycle sport: Giles Pidcock's PH Mass team, British Cycling's Olympic Academy, and the British registered UCI Continental squad, Trinity Racing. Perhaps the most valuable piece in Sam's jigsaw, however, is the support of the Dave Rayner Foundation, a hugely respected charity supporting British riders abroad. It occupies a special place in the affections of Brother Cycling. In 2018, Phil Jones, our managing director, rode the entire route of the Tour of Britain one day ahead of the race to raise funds for its excellent work. Sam, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's nice to hear.
A bit wordy, I think. But there was a lot to cram in. And I wanted to start by sort of throwing you a bit of a curveball, because all of Brother's sponsorship is in domestic road racing.
Yeah.
And looking at your most recent season, there's this incredible mix. You know, there's the Ilkley Grand Prix and there's Trobro Leon. There's the Tour d'Alsace. And in previous years, you've been a winner of the Junior Cycle Classic. So I just wondered how that all fitted together. You've got, on the one hand, this very international program, and on the other, you do the key domestic races too.
Yeah, so this year it worked out that when I was back for Nationals, it was kind of the time of all the crit scene, basically. It fitted perfectly to do those races whilst I was back in the UK. And, you know, they're the races that I was doing when I was younger that I, like, really enjoyed doing and, like, that really got me, like, hooked into the sport. So, yeah, it was good to do those. But, yeah, it's a massive contrast to the things like Trobro Leon, like you said. And actually last year as well, when I was on Academy, I was doing, like, NatBees and stuff, which, you know, they were, I think, were actually pretty vital, because I hadn't had much racing for, like, the 2 years on Academy. So I did these NatBees before, like, a massive block of racing in France, you know. And this, for me, was, like, a key part of that year or the last 2 years, because I needed, like, results. I was a second year under 23 and I hadn't really done any races. So I think I did three NatBees and I won two of them. And then I went to France with a load of confidence because of these races. And yeah, and then I managed to get a few podiums and win a stage out there as well.
Amazing.
Before breaking my collarbones.
One of the NatBees that you did was the Crimson Performance Road Race, which was a team that Brother sponsored. We know Matt Hallam well. And it's wonderful to hear, Sam, that somebody like yourself is still involved in the domestic scene, that it still has value for a rider on your career path.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I'm proud to be from the UK. You know, whilst I'm here, I'd like to still race in the UK. You know, they're good races for sure.
And no better showcase for your talent than the National Road Race this year, which was absolutely epic. And then right at the end, a little known rider called Mark Cavendish and Alexander Richardson. I mean, what a race. How was it from the inside?
I am pretty proud of that race, and normally I don't like coming second.
You look gutted, I have to say, on the boat.
Yeah, maybe initially, but yeah, I can say I'm proud of that result, and it worked out that I was rewarded with the under 23 jersey, which was good. So it kind of doesn't really feel like I lost the race, but every time I go to a race in Europe now, they introduce me as second to Mark Cavendish at Nationals, and yeah, it's quite nice to hear that, actually. Nationals is always, I've done it twice, and both times it's been a chaotic race, you know, like, it's the one race of the year where everybody's, like, all in for themselves, pretty much. You just have to be in the right moves, like, all the time, and, you know, I'd like to say I'm someone that races with my head, and, yeah, I don't know, maybe Nationals showed that a little.
It was a very British race, I felt. I mean, stating the blindingly obvious, it was the British National Road Race Championships.
Yeah.
But in the way it was raced, full gas from the gun, as you say, lots of different moves, things like that, you couldn't take your eyes off it.
Yeah, you had to be awake for the whole race. You know, if you switched off once and you missed a move, like, you've got nobody around you to help, like, bring it back. So you always had to be on the front foot. So, yeah, I was very mentally tired after that race, as well as physically tired.
I can well imagine. The other highlight of that weekend, of course, was the circuit race. And again, it couldn't be any more British. The crit scene is such an important part of domestic racing, and wonderful to see you in it. And then that showdown between you, Josh Tarling, and Matt
Bostock.
So tell us about that. You were playing cat and mouse there right at the end. You refused to chase Tarling down. Put the emphasis on Matt.
It was very British. We set off and there's a crash on the first corner, and, you know, I had a spike of adrenaline then, and I didn't have a very good TT like 2 days before. So, you know, I was kind of like hungry for something, kind of using this for the road race, like good prep. Yeah, and then we found ourselves in a group of four, and then I think Bob punctured or something. So then, yeah, it was a group of three. And after that, because, yeah, I guess like two of the main teams in the race that, like, no one could really bring it back, and because, you know, we had guys behind, like, just shutting everything down. And then we were in a tricky situation where we didn't want to lap the field because we didn't want to make someone, like, win or lose the race because we're getting caught up in other riders, which for me was probably a bad decision to, like, agree with or to say, I don't know, because that meant, yeah, we were sort of just riding around for half the race, and, you know, it just came down to who was the fastest at the end. And I think Matt Bostock was the favourite, but yeah, he just simply beat me in the sprint.
That style of racing would have been a much bigger part of Matt's season. I think he'd done all the Tour Series.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Another thing, Sam, that really impressed me about your performance that day and what stood out a mile. I mean, we talk about in cycling, you know, souplesse, this very elegant pedaling style that you have. And within the context of a crit race, which is full gas from the start, eyeballs out, fully committed, you still retain that beautiful, elegant pedaling style. Tell us about that. Is that something you've worked on, or is that something you've either got it or you haven't?
Yeah, I guess it is something I've worked on when I was kind of like getting into cycling. Like, I kind of got into cycling through the Pidcock family, and I remember going on rides on Saturday morning with like Sonia, Joe and Tom's mum, and Joe as well. And because I was like pretty new to the sport, like, my parents were cyclists, so she'd kind of tell me, oh, you need to like pedal with your heel down, like pedal smoothly and stuff. And then, yeah, when I got a bit older, I was watching people like Wiggins, the way he looks on a bike is something that kind of I aspired to be like. So I think it's important to look good on the bike. So yeah, I never want to be ragged. But then in races, like the crit champs, like, I thought I was being like all over the bike and stuff, but then you watch the video back and I'm not. So yeah,
I was sort of live tweeting it, and I think this guy looks like a ballet dancer in a nightclub, you know. Everybody else was eyeballs out, very ragged, as you say, and then wow, this incredibly smooth pedaling style. Let's talk about Charles and Sonia, because they got you into cycling. How did that come about? Did you know the family anyway?
Yeah, so I went to school with Joe since, I think, from nursery possibly. I was friends with him at school, very good friends with him. Yeah, I remember him and Tom always used to come to school on a BMX. I was very into sports. I started riding my bike as well, but I'd never thought it would kind of be like this. I started riding to school with them, I think, and getting told off in the playground for riding our BMXs too fast. And then, yeah, it kind of evolved from there. I remember one day after school, Sonia was like, oh, do you want to come to a go-ride session that they used to be run by Chris Young? So I went to one, and yeah, I just loved it. And that's kind of what I wanted to do. So since then, just become a cyclist.
I know that Giles now has a team that he takes over to the continent. You sort of graduated, I guess, from PH Mass to the academy. Was that a difficult decision, or did that feel like the natural progression at that stage?
Yeah, for me, I think it felt natural to go to academy. You know, the likes of Hayter, Fred, Jake, all those guys have progressed from that. And you know, you're still young as a first year under 23. Like, I'm pretty independent, but I was kind of advised or like stay in the UK and stuff. And yeah, so I went to academy and I wanted to still like explore the track as well. It just turned out that we didn't have many races with COVID, so I missed a lot of like the normal academy years, but it was good.
Yeah, you still are a track rider. You won a European silver medal this year with yeah. Will Tidball. Is that, for example, when I spoke to Fred the other day and he and Ethan are off to Ghent, well, next week, I think, is that something you'd still like to have in, as part of your programme?
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest. Bramir asked me this year, like halfway through the year, if I'd be interested in track. And then, yeah, I did track Euros. I never want to completely shut it off. I think the focus is on the road, but if an opportunity arises, then yeah, maybe I'll go for it.
How difficult is it to combine the two? Very different training before we even think about racing.
Yeah, it is very different. And to be honest, I didn't do enough for track Euros this year. For like the first half of the race, I was okay. And then yeah, I was just on my limit and couldn't really do much in the second half of the race, which I felt a little bad because I felt like I let my partner Will Tidball down in the Madison. But I think if I did it again, I'd definitely have to do more prep. I think I did two track sessions before, like European track champs. It wasn't the most ideal prep.
That's not a lot of preparation. So no. Chapeau for winning a silver medal. Tell me about how the academy shaped your development. The sort of first generation academy superstars, you know, Cavendish, Thomas, they started with the academy. They came out the other end into pro contracts. More recently, we've seen riders sort of mix and match. Jake Stewart, for example, who started off on the academy, felt that it wasn't going to work out for him in the team pursuit specifically, and then went full gas for the road and FDJ. And you've had a stint, I think, with Trinity. How does the academy fit into the sort of jigsaw for riders of your generation?
Well, I guess I was pretty similar to Jake Stewart. You know, I did the academy. You learn a lot from academy. These are like the first years you kind of move away from home. You become independent and you learn to do everything like around bike riding as well. And yeah, I think it hardens you up a bit, does going to academy. I was just unfortunate that it was the COVID year, so there wasn't much racing and it was very hard to get out of the UK. That's kind of why, you know, the second year under 23, halfway through the year, I said to Bramir that, okay, I think I need more road racing if I want a career in cycling, basically, because yeah, of course you need races to show yourself. So yeah, I just made the decision to go to FDJ to kind of just focus fully on the road and to know that I'd get a full calendar throughout the year on the road.
They've clearly uncovered a seam of talent in Britain with Jake and with Lewis. How did your connection to FDJ come about?
Yeah, so as I was saying earlier, I had these races in France. I had three stage races in a row. This was kind of my only opportunity this year to kind of show myself, because the other races were possibly too late in the year to get a team or something. So yeah, I went into these races like in really good shape and I was getting like second, third, fourth. And then yeah, I won a stage of Kreisbreis and I was leading the race with one day to go. Then I crashed and broke my collarbone. And like after that, then I think FDJ were interested and I had a call with them. But I think before that, I was interested in FDJ, and I don't know if they're interested in me, but yeah, I guess I showed myself a little in these races.
I mean, this is another comparatively new development, young British riders targeting the development teams of World Tour squads. I was speaking to Oscar Romley a couple of weeks ago, who initially had a connection with Ajit Dazar. He was going to go out to Chambéry, but again, COVID got in the way, and now he's ended up with Team GSM, and he's very happy with them out in the Netherlands. Is that sort of on your radar now as a young British rider at academy level? Are you actively seeking opportunities with World Tour development teams?
Yeah, I think so. Development teams are just, it's a World Tour setup, but an under 23 team. For me, like being on FDJ made the jump seem like a lot smaller. You know, you integrate with the World Tour team, you have a load of support. So yeah, I think it's almost easier to become pro if you're riding for a development team, I'd say, because yeah, you don't necessarily even have to win a race. Like if you impress a team and they think you're valuable, then essentially you get a World Tour contract. So yeah, I think maybe it's the way forward for the road if you only want to focus on the road.
Yeah. How different is it from academy life? Is it as different as, you know, going to university and then starting a job as an apprentice or something like that?
I'd say it's similar in many ways, because on Academy, you live in a team house. On FDJ, you live in a team house. It's just, yeah, it's just the fact that you're across the sea in another country. So yeah, it's very similar in most aspects, to be honest. Apart, well, the language as well is different, but yeah, for me, luckily the team, the under 23 team is English speaking, so that wasn't too bad for me this year.
Is there a sort of onus on speaking French too? Do you have lessons and things like that?
Yeah. So the team, they give you, I don't know, it's something like 40 hours of free lessons online. So you have a tutor that you have Zoom calls with, which I haven't really done enough this year. So yeah, I'm playing catch up at the minute, trying to learn French.
We spoke earlier about this wide range of influences on your career, from Nutbees to crit races to the highest standard of under 23 racing. I mean, how does that prepare you for a professional race like Trobriand-Leon? And I know that's a specific example because of the off-road sections, but how do you draw on all of those formative experiences to suddenly find yourself in a professional race?
The jump from under 23 to those races is pretty big. They're raced very differently. But yeah, for me, Trobriand-Leon was like the third or fourth race with the World Tour team. And yeah, I think the first one was Nocair or something like that. I was extremely nervous before that, you know, because of course you want to impress him. You don't want to do anything wrong. Maybe too nervous. I was losing sleep like the night before and stuff. So by the time that I did Trobriand-Leon, I was really relaxed and I liked the atmosphere of the team and, you know, I knew all the staff and stuff. So yeah, I felt well prepared going into that race and yeah, just relaxed and happy in the environment. So I think that helped for me to race better as well, I think.
When I spoke to Oscar, he was saying, actually, in some ways, under 23 racing is harder than professional racing because it's far less controlled. Is that your experience too?
Yeah, I think physically as well. The under 23 races can be very hard. It's hard to win a race at under 23 level, and even harder tactically as well, because you don't really know what's going to happen. You don't know who's going to control. Whereas you go to a pro race and you know kind of exactly what's going to happen, when the race is going to light up, and you just need to have the legs to be there essentially. And it's a lot like less stress-free, I guess, in the bunch as well. It feels safer, so yeah, I guess in some ways it is easier, but then at the same time it's harder, because yeah, you need very good legs to be at the front of the race.
I mean, we saw you at the front of the race at the Tour of Britain on more than one occasion, three top 10 finishes and a shifting sort of role really on stage two. You were very much the lead out man for Jake. But a couple of stages later, that had changed and you seem to be the guy that was in the driving seat. Yeah. Tell us about your Tour of Britain.
I think the Tour of Britain was really good for me. I had great legs because it was kind of before World Championships. So, and that was kind of my main target of the year. Yeah, the team we had there was really good. It was a great team atmosphere. Some days I was leading out Jake. You can argue he's faster than me and yeah, he has more experience and stuff. And then Bramir and John, they wanted to kind of give some leadership to me, you know, to prepare for Worlds. You've got to have leadership in some races to win, you know, other races, to kind of make you more used to it, I guess, and like to go for the win. The last stage that happened to be that Jake was leading me out, and yeah, it went well. I just got beaten by three faster guys.
So I guess the big question is, what type of rider are you, Sam? Because with Jake, it's very clear the guy's a sprinter. You seem to have a wider remit. Would that be fair?
Yeah, and I'd kind of like it to carry on like that as well. I don't really know what kind of rider I am. I'll see in the next 2 years, I guess. But yeah, I'd like to, of course, target the classics and the cobbles. And then, yeah, I don't know if the Ardennes classics too hilly for me yet. I don't know. But I think I'm a rider that just seeks opportunities and goes for it, I guess. Like a bit of a free roll, because I can climb fairly well to a certain extent. Like if it's too long, I'm gone. But yeah, short, steep climbs are kind of my thing. And like the chaos of the classics races as well. That's what I like.
Interesting, you were speaking a moment ago about leadership, and you know, I had an interesting conversation with Fred a couple of weeks ago, because he's sort of the ultimate freelancer in a way. You know, his performances in the breakaways at the Tour and the World Tour were fantastic, and I said, you know, do you thrive on that? You can shape your own destiny. And he said, well, yeah, it's nice, but actually I had the team riding for me on a couple of occasions, and having Mikel Landa on the front to drop all the sprinters was a huge privilege. But he said it comes with a lot of pressure. And I just wondered how you feel about leadership, or do you prefer to kind of take the race into your own hands and shape the race?
Yeah, for sure. When in the meeting before the race, when you're told you're the leader, you do have a lot of pressure on your shoulders. You know, you spend the whole race like thinking, like, I can't mess this up. I've got to do everything right. And yeah, this happened at Alsace, the last stage that I won. I hadn't had many like leadership roles with FDJ that year because, you know, the team is so stacked. You always have like a pure sprinter or someone that can climb better than you. So it's hard to get leadership in a team that's so good, I guess. So yeah, I said to them, if you ride for me, then I'm pretty sure I'll be in this stage. And then they're like, yeah, okay. But of course, we had the yellow jersey. So it just so happened to turn out perfectly that, you know, I had two guys around me all day. And yeah, the whole day I was, yeah, very extremely nervous. And it's like until the last 10K, you kind of, that's when you forget about who's riding for you and stuff, because you just like in and amongst the race with adrenaline. Yeah, so there is a lot of pressure when you're the leader.
What does that do for your confidence when it pays off? The next time you're in the meeting, you must feel more confident about putting your hand up and saying, yeah, I feel good, I'm ready to take this on.
Yeah, for sure. Like winning races breeds a lot of confidence. Yeah, I guess it makes you confident for the next race that, you know, you can actually do it.
This is going to sound like a ridiculous question, given that you're a racing cyclist, but how important is winning to you for a sprinter? It's absolutely everything, isn't it? It's the be-all and end-all. Second place is nowhere. As we've said, your remit's a bit wider. Is it win or bust, or do you have a broader perspective?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, a race that you can win is like win or nothing, I guess. I would like to win races throughout my career. Winning is like a major part, and like in training, that's kind of what you train for, to be good enough to win a race. So yeah, for me, is winning is very important. But then, of course, you go to many races and you ride for other guys. And, you know, when you're teammates with like guys like that you're really friends with, then, yeah, of course, you really want them to win as well. So when the race doesn't suit you as well.
And when you win and you bring victory to the team, that must be hugely satisfying.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of pressure, I think, in the team, you know, with so many guys winning races. Like, I think maybe two or three guys had won before I won Gent-Wevelgem, and I was in Gent-Wevelgem and I was thinking, right, I really need to win this race now because I can't have everyone in the team winning and not me. So yeah, I think winning breeds winning, I guess, because everyone else wants to do it as well.
We spoke earlier about this broad mix of races that you have, and to frame that in the context of winning, you won the Crimson Performance Road Race, you won another NatB called the Tim James Memorial, and then you're off, you know, to the Tour d'Alsace, you're off to the biggest under 23 races in Europe. Does that sort of encapsulate your career in a sense?
Yeah, I guess. I'd like to be a versatile rider. And yeah, that was a very strange year.
You had a very successful season again in 2019. You won the European Junior Pursuit Championship. You won the Guido Raybrook race. You won a stage of the Junior Tour of Wales. You were third at Gent-Wevelgem. But this year's been something else again. How do those two seasons compare?
Well, funny enough, it doesn't really feel like I had two seasons in between those two seasons you mentioned. Yeah, when I was a junior, of course, winning races was good. And then, yeah, and then I missed almost, but I did one race in the whole of 2020. And then, yeah, I got some more races in 2021. And then, yeah, it felt like then I was just following on from my junior career a little bit, like playing catch up, I guess. I guess everyone was almost in the same boat, but I didn't really feel like I was a third year under 23. So I still felt young, like a junior at that point, I think.
It must have been particularly challenging for an athlete, the pandemic. I mean, somebody in a 9-to-5 job, if they lose a year of their career so early in their working life, not the end of the world, but an athlete has a very short career. How challenging was it to manage that pandemic situation, thinking I'm losing, you know, a year of my development?
Yeah, it was very tough, to be honest. You know, at times I was thinking, oh, like maybe like if it carries on like this, I won't even have a cycling career, because everyone says the under 23 years, you know, if you haven't turned pro already from a junior, which, you know, a lot of guys are now. But yeah, everyone says the under 23 years of your career are almost the most important years, because that's like your window to become a pro. And like, oh, I lost, I guess, 1.5 of those years. At times I was in Manchester on academy thinking, oh, I may actually not have a career, but I just kind of got my head down and just worked really hard, and then yeah, it paid off.
How important was being in that environment around that time when your whole future seems at stake? You're actually part of a program with the National Federation. I guess you can pick up the phone and call Giles at any time. How important was that support from the people around you?
Yeah, the support was very crucial, I think. And actually, I think Academy managed it very well, you know. We were just unfortunate we couldn't get out and race, you know, as much as some other teams. But like Ben Green would put on these rides that almost be simulating racing, like just big hard training days. And, you know, they were the days that you kind of forget about it and just ride your bike hard. We did that for, you know, many times throughout the year. And I think that helped massively.
You mentioned a moment ago, you know, guys turning pro from the junior ranks, which is incredible but true. Has it been a conscious decision to stay within the under 23 ranks and properly develop before becoming a professional rider?
Yeah, I've always been advised, you know, only turn pro when you know you're kind of good enough. And yeah, maybe after last year, I could have scraped a pro contract. I don't know, maybe, but it would have been scraping it. If I wasn't ready after this year, I definitely would have stayed under 23 for another year. And yeah, I always said to Ben Greenwood, who's my coach on like ODA, so back when I was like under 14, under 16, and then yeah, happened to be a coach at Academy as well. I said to him that I want to win like big under 23 races before coming pro, because then that's like a way to know that you're ready for it. Like Pidcock did, I guess. He stayed 3 years under 23. And yeah, he's someone that got me into cycling, so I kind of followed in the footsteps of him a little bit.
Just in terms of, I don't know if missing out is the right phrase, but you know, you talk about under 14, under 16, you've been a cyclist most of your life. I guess your friends will be off to university, they'll be out at the weekends, that kind of thing. Do you ever feel you're missing out, or are you living the dream here? Are you chasing the best jobs in the world?
I'm definitely living the dream. You know, I'm not someone that, you know, is thinking about going out all the time and stuff like this. You know, I'd rather have a life that's, you know, in sport than kind of doing that. I've always thought like university and all that wasn't for me. So yeah, I'm more than happy with my career and never have like regret or envy of other people, really.
Yeah, I mean, we're here a couple of hours before the Rainer Foundation dinner. Tell me about the role they've played in your career.
Yeah, for sure. It's really helped because, yeah, of course, like for your under 23 years, you don't have like a load of money. And yeah, they support you like very well with that. And yeah, I guess you need a bit of money to live in Europe and stuff. So yeah, without the support, I think many people wouldn't have the opportunity to kind of go for it and live out in Belgium or France or whatever and try and become a pro. They've turned quite a few people now like, into pros, and I think without like their support, then it probably wouldn't have been possible for a lot of people.
I mean, it's become a thing almost, hasn't it? The Rainer Foundation. It's a charity, but my goodness, they've got an eye for talent. Does that have a cachet? Does it have a reputation within the under 23 peloton?
Well, it's something the British riders only really know, but I guess most people, almost everybody that lives out in another country and is racing for an under 23 team is on the Rainer Foundation. So yeah, it's very well recognised and you know, everyone appreciates it massively.
And how about being a British rider in this day and age? It's incredible how quickly it's changed. 15 or 20 years ago, you could count the number of British pros on the fingers of one hand. Nowadays, there's a lot of British pros and some of them are the best riders in the world. Does that bring expectation or is that a sort of badge of pride now?
Yeah, of course. It's really good to be amongst that almost. Yeah, when I was young, I was watching guys like Cavendish, Wiggins, like Froome and all those guys on TV. And you're like, wow, I really want to be like them one day. And then the younger generation, like Fred, Tom, Jake, all that lot, Matt Walls, then they're the kind of people that are only a couple of years older than you that, you know, I'm friends with most of them. And they're the people that make you believe it's possible. So you have all that hope. And yeah, so I guess it's easy for an up and coming British rider to be inspired by the older guys.
It's wonderful to hear you say that. That simply wouldn't have happened, you know, within living memory, that sort of pioneering generation. Cavendish, Thomas, whatever, and now you guys, which, as I mentioned earlier, it seems a much sort of freer approach in a sense. It's not that very rigid in with the academy, out the other end into a pro contract like it would have been for someone like Cavendish. It seems a little bit more fluid. There's cyclocross in the mix for some of you guys. There's a slightly freer approach. Would that be fair?
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. I think when I was under 16 and stuff, like almost everybody was going to academy and then coming out the other end. But yeah, now like there's so many ways to become a pro, I think. And I think actually, you know, it helps doing like multidiscipline and all of this. You know, you can kind of choose your own pathway. One pathway doesn't work for everybody, which may be why there's so many good British pros now, I guess.
And you already have experience of living in France. That's great. And you're sort of planning your move now to Nice. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because this year I lived in France, like 2 hours from the nearest airport. So yeah, Nice seems a perfect location with an airport, very close. And yeah, with riding for a French team, it makes sense to stay in France with all the benefits. There's already a lot of pros in Nice, so it's very hard to know where the right place to live is. But I'll see what Nice is like in the next 2 years and decide if I want to stay there or I'll go somewhere else.
Is that something the team is helping you with, or are you on the French equivalent of Rightmove trying to find an apartment?
Yeah, well, both the team and my agent, Andrew, they've got an estate agent for me, so I'm not really having to do anything. Yeah, every now and then I go on to browse through apartments and just look how stupidly expensive it is in Nice. But yeah, I've got someone on it now looking to find somewhere for me.
Brilliant. How much of a shift will it be from Yorkshire or even from Manchester, or have you already narrowed that gap with your time in France?
Yeah, I think I've already narrowed that gap a little bit. The main thing is just good training roads, I guess, in Nice. I've never actually been, but I've been told, there's good mountains and there's also good flat roads, and that's kind of all you need. And the weather's great. It seems like, in that respect, a good place to live.
I mean, $64,000 question, but what's your sort of long-term ambition, Sam? What would you like to have on your Palmarès by the end of it all?
I think one race I'd really, really want to win throughout my career would be Roubaix. I just think it's like the most epic race in the world, to be honest. Like, if you win that, you're just hardcore. And yeah, World Champs as well. Every year that I've done World Champs, it's always been the focus of the year. You know, can imagine how cool it would be to wear the rainbow bands and be named World Champ for a whole year. So yeah, World Champs and Roubaix. And then of course, yeah, winning stages of the Tour or something like that.
You've already ridden in World Championships and a home World Championships at that, Harrogate 2019.
Yeah, that was an incredible day. It's literally the roads that I ride on like almost every day at that point, up and down the valley, which is what I always used to do. And yeah, we raced, we came down the valley and into Harrogate, and yeah, I knew where every pothole was and I knew everything, so it's pretty surreal. And then you came into Harrogate and the crowds were insane, so yeah, that's probably a race I'll never forget in my career, I think.
You went home afterwards?
Yeah, I did. It was weird. I think I was driving at this point, and I think a few days before the race, I said to my mum, I packed my car with my bike and kit, and I was like, oh, I'm off to World Championships. And, you know, drove like 20 minutes to Harrogate and stayed in Harrogate for like, I don't know, 3-4 nights or whatever it was. And then, yeah, finished the race and went back home after the race, like pretty casually. I don't think that will happen again.
Yeah, absolutely not. Although next year is Glasgow, that's not too far away. Would you hope to go there?
Yeah, of course. I'd love to make it to Glasgow World Championships, but I'd have to make the elite team, because yeah, I wouldn't do the under 23 race. And BC's rule is, if you're world tour, you can't do the under 23 race anyway. So yeah, of course, I'd love to make the elite team.
Nice problem for BC to have. So many young riders now in the world tour.
Yeah, I think it is a problem for them. There's almost too many guys to choose from. The standard of everyone is very good as well, so tricky decision for them.
Absolutely. And another difficult decision they'll face is who to take to Paris. Would you want to be on that list too?
Yeah, I'd love to be. Well, it's a dream for every athlete, I think, to make it to the Olympics. And yeah, I think Paris is maybe possible. It's, who knows? But yeah, I'd love to go to the Olympics and maybe Paris, I guess.
Well, it always seems to be well within your grasp from what we've seen this season. So yeah, very best of luck with it all, Sam. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
No, thanks for having me. It's been great.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.